Okay, this is Working Group B. Do we want to, for formality's sake, call everybody's name and have them express their presence?
Would you like me to go through who's on the call, Milton?
Yeah, why don't you do that, Glenn, with your mellifluous tones. I think it will be nicer than if I do it.
We've got Dan Crim.
Hi.
Palmer Hamilton. Patrick Kane. Philip Shepherd. Carol Bird, yourself, Milton, Melissa Rotino, Lane Mortensen, Leo Longau, Rod Donatis, Margie Millam, Tom Keller, Doug Eisenberg, Steve Metallitz, Michael Wanika, and Susan Kawaguchi.
Very good. Okay, so I circulated an agenda. The agenda was
David Ferris now joins.
That we would first approve that agenda. Secondly, we would review the proposals.
Thank you.
Third, we would discuss the grouping of the proposals. Then we would develop action items for the next meeting. Is there any discussion of that agenda?
Excuse me, Avery Doria now joins.
Okay, hearing no discussion, I will assume that you all think that's a good way to proceed. So we'll move right into the review of the proposals. Does everybody have the compiled list that I sent out last night?
Yep.
Yes.
What we do is we have...
Hi, this is Bertrand Lachapelle. Sorry for being late.
Hello. We have seven proposals that I grouped into three different categories. And I gave them shorthand names. So I will take them basically in the order that I listed. As you know, I've grouped them... Basically, it seems to me that the type of legitimate third party that's being contemplated is the main difference between these proposals, and that is what seems to drive the differences in access mechanisms, although there's going to be plenty of room for debate about that once we get through the legitimate third party part. Anyway, one group really has in mind basically public law enforcement agencies or, in the case of the due process proposal, at least some kind of gatekeeping by public legal process. Others contemplate some kind of a apply for access, and anybody basically with a legitimate need would be given access upon application and review. And then we have a sector-specific proposal that refers only to the needs of one particular industrial sector, the banking industry. Let's begin with the OPTA proposal. I see Mr. DeNavris.
Yes.
On the line. Would you like to quickly run us through the nature of your proposal, or would you like somebody else to summarize it?
Well, what I would like to clarify is that we are an independent government agency with a mandate only for spam and spyware and malware enforcement. So we don't have any sort of mandate to speak who else should be on this list or should have access. We can basically only speak for ourselves, and that narrows our discussion very much to what I've written down. And what we basically need is some sort of an unlimited access to be able to be fight spammers, and that's what we need. And with the proposal that we read about a year ago, that would have become nigh to impossible worldwide. Maybe in the Netherlands, but we come into so much data which is abroad just to catch a dead Dutch spammer that we need really an easy access. And that's what we are proposing, and trying to find ways to achieve that. So that's just about what my comments and Optus comments are all about. Thank you.
Okay. did anybody have any clarifying questions or any kind of any points about this proposal that are unclear to people as they want to discuss?
Milton, this is Dan. I have one question.
Yeah.
Under access process and mechanisms, there's a reference to bulk access.
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean that you would be able to get a whole set of different registrant information in a single query or just single queries across the whole database?
It's the last one. We mentioned bulk because we in some cases we get into thousands of registrations by the same person. And although I'm not really the one who investigates, I'm the one who's the international liaison for OPTA on this subject, my colleagues tell me that you need to have access to sometimes thousands of data in order to get some sort of a pattern with who this spammer is, because their registration is always false, or usually false for smart ones, but you can still get at them through mistakes they make in this gigantic string of websites they've got running, or with data they've got for possible websites. So that's what I mean with bulk.
So by bulk, you simply mean repeated queries.
Repeated queries, very fast in one line.
Okay. Now, under ICANN's contractual system, bulk access, I think, means something different. And somebody who's familiar with this can maybe jump into the discussion here, but...
Okay, if necessary, I can change it. Just tell me what you write, and I'll change it to that term.
Okay.
So please assist me in that. Send me an email, and we'll make sure that it's changed.
Okay.
Milton, this is Margie. I can explain what bulk access
is. I was going to call on you, Margie. Yeah, why don't you, I'm sure
okay,
you know.
Yeah, basically all the registrars are obligated to provide bulk access to the entire WHOIS database for a fee, and the party has to agree to the contractual terms. So whatever the limitations are that ICANN requires, such as no spam or marketing purposes, that's part of the agreement under the bulk access.
And bulk access means that you give them a disk or something that contains the collection of the registrar's entire WHOIS records for their entire names under management at a given point in time. Is that right?
Well, it could be that. It could also be like a password into the system to do queries. I mean, it just depends.
Uh-huh. Okay. It could mean a password. So this kind of password query-based is what you seem to be talking about, Mr. DeNavris?
I think that would work if we would get some sort of a code where we could get access to the database, which will probably help us a tremendous lot, and that would probably be so for all law enforcement agencies.
And you would not want that to be registrar by registrar. You want that to be centralized.
I think that would be easiest, but that... If that is possible to arrange, because if you have to go to every registrar around the world, then maybe that will become nigh on impossible to arrange.
That would definitely be more difficult. I'm not sure if it would be impossible, but...
would be time-consuming, let's
definitely
name it that. And if you can make it easier, because we don't need access for ourselves. We adhere to all privacy rules of the European Union. So that means that we only go for when we receive complaints, and there are actually complaints on our website which were registered by end users. That's the moment that we need access, and not before that.
Milton?
Yes.
Now, one question I would have is whether you require the domain, well, if you require only the data for the names, or would you like to have some kind of search availability that you just type in the name of the holder and get out all the names that belong to that person or might belong to the person with that name?
That was a question for you, Mr. Jarvis.
Sorry. Could you repeat it again, because I heard the name Milton, and I've just saw something pop up on my screen. Sorry.
That's okay. The question I have is whether you're looking for normal WHOIS search capabilities we have right now, that you just type in the domain name and you get an answer who that person is who owns the name, or whether you're looking for advanced search capabilities, like if you type in the name of the person you're looking for and get back all the domain names you need.
I think the last one would definitely help. At this moment, we do not have that ability.
Right, but due to the European data protection laws, that's one of the things that would be very hard to accomplish.
At this moment, we will be quite happy with what we have at this stage, because that helps us to get to the right people to get more information. But then you know where to start looking, and on the internet you can get a lot of information fast. And after that, when we need to delve in deeper, that's when you start writing, formally writing for information. So then you will get to bank details and that sort of thing.
Right, because...
So if more is possible and arrangeable through the laws applicable, then we would certainly be happy to be able to have that sort of extra access. But if it's not possible, we're happy with the status quo as it now is, if that would still apply for us.
Okay, that's kind of a good segue to the next proposal. I don't think Paul Sturr is on here, and we discussed that proposal a little bit last week. So let me just run through it. I think the main difference between what the Blob proposal and the Opta proposal is simply that the access mechanism is different. Basically, the Blob makes it everything very much like the current system, in that it simply delivers the parts that are supposed to be concealed are delivered in an encrypted fashion, and only people who have keys can see that information. Under that proposal, Opta would and other law enforcement agencies, if they were certified, would get keys, and there are some practical questions about how these keys are distributed and who distributes them. They're not fully answered by this proposal. Are there any questions about this one?
Philip, one question. I think, Milton, you rightly described the difference between this and the Opta proposal. My question is also back to our friend from Opta. Presumably, you would have no difficulty in also having a mechanism whereby you could see some of this additional data.
The question is if we would have a system to get into that.
Yes, the second proposal, which is coming from a group of registrars, mm-hmm. interestingly, is offering access to law enforcement for both the WHOIS data and additional data which could help with identification. Presumably you would welcome that.
Of course we would welcome that. The question is more or less, is the data legitimate under privacy laws? Because because if it's not, then we cannot use it in court. So it would not uphold the case. So that means we would have to have data which is within these laws. But
does the data? Sorry.
As I understand it, Mr. Navris, the data that you would get with the key would be exactly the same data you're getting now.
That's what I understand, and if that is it, then that would help us a lot if that would remain the way it is, and that opens all the ways to the further investigation. And if it's possible to get more on the same query, then it would help. But in the end, you need privacy sensitive data. You have to get through formal ways, because there's no other way to get at them. That would mean banking details, banking transactions, and all sort of other privacy-related information.
Right. You're talking about a tier that goes way beyond what's in WHOIS, and you're talking about getting a customer record from the registrar or the ISP, right?
Right. Yeah. That would be with a formal information request.
I don't think that the Blob
kind of proposal was contemplating putting that information in the blob.
No, right. So that's not what we're asking for.
No, everybody understands that.
Okay.
I'm curious. I missed this last call. Sorry. I just have two quick comments. I'm not sure what the OPTA proposal is. I think I know what the blob proposal is. That's my first one. My second one, I just wanted to add to the blob proposal, which is if we do the blob proposal, a side benefit is that the registrar does not know which part of law enforcement or even if law enforcement got the information or not. Whereas some other methods, the registrar would know and so therefore could, you know, provide a service to registrants saying, hey, law enforcement just got your information, pay me $5. All right.
So that's Paul.
Yeah, sorry.
Okay.
Yeah, it's Paul.
Glad to have you.
Yeah, so my comment is there's a side benefit with the blob proposal, which is the registrants don't know that the law enforcement is looking at the data, which is a benefit to law enforcement, I believe, when they do investigations. And my other comment is I don't know what the OPTA proposal is.
Okay, I think our proposal is very close to your proposal. Of course, we do not want the registrant to know that we're investigating into him, because then that way he could take all sort of measures that would take away all the proof that we are trying to find. Because in the end, if it's a Dutch organization we're after, because that's the only sort of organization we can go at, we want all their information from their servers and everything. But we can only get at them through these stats which we are trying to get from the registrants. And then in the end we can do all sort of actions in the Netherlands, which gets us the final proof, and it's from their own computers and servers. That's the very final step. But if they're warned on forehand because we're looking into their data, then it will be very hard to find any evidence. If you understand what I mean.
Yeah, but I don't see any fundamental incompatibility between OPTA and BLOB.
No, neither do I, except for the few things I mentioned in the email to you, Nils. But I will get back to your questions later. Just saw them on my screen.
Okay. All right, then moving quickly then to the Wendy's, the due process proposal.
Milton, this is Steve Metallis. I had one question about the
blog. Sorry, yeah, go ahead.
Paul, this turns on certification by Interpol member country national central bureaus. And I don't know how those operate in other countries. In the United States, the only members of those bureaus are federal law enforcement agencies. So how would this accommodate, for example, state or local law enforcement agencies that want to get the key to the blob?
I don't know. They would have to get the key somehow, either from the federal guys or directly from the registrars, I would assume.
Can I step in here, Milton? It's Carol Bird.
Go ahead.
Put me in the queue, too, Milton. It's Ken.
All right.
With regards to Interpol, from the RCMP perspective, I haven't dealt with them, but we have a colleague that did that deals with the RCMP Interpol group, and I asked the same question, trying to better inform myself, if you will. And my understanding is that any police agency in Canada, so I would assume, and maybe it's a bad assumption, but I would assume the same would apply to the United States or any other country, that any law enforcement, police agency would apply to the Interpol group in their country, so in our case it would be Interpol Ottawa, and ask for consideration to have access to whichever database it is that Interpol would deem advances investigations. And so that would not preclude any municipal law enforcement or provincial for us, which is the same in the states as the state law enforcement, from being able to access the information. Now, I certainly didn't ask the question formally. I was just trying to educate myself. But it sounded like, at least from our colleague that is in the RCMP that deals with Interpol, that there is a mechanism for government, police, and law enforcement agencies to be recognized by Interpol, but that is only for the government ones. So that would be what you would call federal, state, and citywide. I don't know if that assists, but that was just as I was taking a look at the proposals. I asked a few questions internally, and that's the response that I was given.
Well, that's good news, then. It means that we've been having this conversation about Interpol without anybody actually talking to Interpol. But it sounds like they do have mechanisms that at least roughly correspond to some of the things, the functions that we're talking about here. Of course, these details would have to be worked out a lot more carefully if we were talking about implementation.
Let me just clarify there for a moment, Milton. In no way, shape, or form was the discussion I had a request for feedback from Interpol or a commitment or me even putting it forward. I was just trying to educate myself.
Right.
I don't want any misconception there.
No, none taken. But it's, I mean, you were doing your due diligence, and that's good. And it sounds like the initial probe did not produce completely contradictory show-stopping kinds of feedback, so that's why I say it's good.
Hi, it's Paul again. I got two more things. Speaking of implementation, I want to point out another benefit of this blob idea is that implementation is relatively easy because it doesn't require some kind of out-of-band system, some other system, some centralized system, something. It doesn't require any of that. It just requires the system we already have, called Port 43, who is.
Okay.
I have a question for Mrs. Taura.
It's Ken Stubbs still holding two.
Okay. Oh, sorry, Ken.
I'm sorry. Ken, you were in the queue. Go ahead.
Yeah, the only comment that I was going to make is all of this is predicated on the assumption that whatever methodology we can develop in the future, that ICANN would work diligently to develop some sort of an approach for communicating with the various law enforcement agencies. And I think that they have the resources to do this, and I mean, we've been beating this around now for 6 years, so clearly it's important enough that the governments have recognized this as well as law enforcement. I would expect cooperation from law enforcement agencies universally on any approach that we take that's practical, and I happen to think that Paul's approach does make some sense there. So just my 2 cents worth. Thanks.
All right. Any other questions about the blob? I'd like to move on.
Yes, one more, please.
Okay.
About NAFIS, OPTA.
Okay.
In your, the question, how are they certified, is about third parties. What do you mean when you say that private third parties could request information about a domain from a law enforcement agency? I would see some privacy-wise trouble there, maybe, because I don't think that an organization like OPTA is even allowed to give this sort of information to a private entity.
Right. I think what's intended there is basically when you said that OPTA was complaint-driven, in other words, somebody, a private party, comes to you and says, I've been spammed or something, then you initiate an investigation. When you're doing that investigation, I guess, I don't know whether you reveal what you find to the private party or not, but that's a legal question that we should think. Consider.
That is clear. What we were thinking about reading this because we get, of course, complaints from private end users, sometimes a company. I was thinking about companies like Microsoft who do their own investigations and private litigation against spammers or spyware spreaders or whatever.
Right.
If they will probably need to get access to this sort of information also, but it's something that we cannot give to them. So I was thinking along that line. So that's there's also private litigation, and they should be able to get their information somewhere also. But as I said, we're an independent government agency, so I cannot take any standpoint on that, if you appreciate what I mean.
Definitely. So I'm making a note.
Milton, Philip, just with a comment from another subgroup, which may partly assist the discussions on subgroup C are all about whether or not a distinction can be made about types of registrants, and one option under discussion is between legal persons and natural persons. In the case of natural persons, of course, it is they who are protected under data privacy legislation typically, whereas legal persons are not. So it may be that if indeed such a distinction exists and goes forward, that may provide a subcategory in terms of the provision of information by an LEA to a third party for at least legal persons. Natural persons may need a different degree of access.
Okay.
So, this is Susan Taguchi from eBay. I'm just wondering how practical it would be to go to law enforcement each and every time we need to contact a registrant of the domain name. We probably look at the Whois database a minimum of 3,000 times a week. And so I know that if I went to my local law enforcement and said, here, I need this information on these 3,000 domains and I need it in a hurry.
Yeah, I want to avoid debating the proposals now. I think we're just trying to find out what they are at this point. So I understand that that will be an issue. Definitely know that. And if we ever get to the apply for access proposals, we will be looking at proposals that are designed to, probably more of what you're looking for.
Milton, I just want to point out that it's possible to contact the registrant without knowing who they are. So you don't have to approach law enforcement to contact registrants.
Yeah. Okay, no more debate. Let's go on to due process proposal. Wendy is not on the line. She said she couldn't be here, so I will run through this as the best as I understand it. Basically, Wendy is presuming that OPOC exists and that you have the information that's published by OPOC. If you
want
to go beyond that, you obtain some kind of valid legal request. She corrected me and said that this is not just law enforcement agencies. It could be anybody. So it might belong with the next category, but it's simply a much more restrictive kind of a process in the sense that you have to go through subpoenas, legal process, court orders, those kinds of things to get the additional information.
Milton, can you add Carol to the queue for that one, please?
And Aubrey, excuse me.
Okay, questions about this proposal. Again, we're questioning, we're not debating. Carol?
I don't know that I can form it in the question format, but 3 points come to mind when I look at this. I'm going to speak from the Canadian perspective, recognizing, though, that law enforcement countries will likely have the same situations, but maybe not all law enforcement in all countries. What this proposal is talking about is being able to obtain a court order. The current information on who is, not the how did you get your order, your banking information, is what we call in Canada pre-warrant. And what that means is it's the information that we do as we begin looking at a situation that will eventually form information we put into a search warrant to obtain the banking information or whatever additional information we need from the registrar. And, you know, if we then go to search a house, that information will be used in there. So if we're saying obtaining a court order would be required, we're saying that law enforcement would not have access to the information currently on the Whois publicly available database, not the ones that are currently, not available, such as the banking information.
So your point is the information on Whois is pre-warrant and therefore does not provide sufficient information for the kinds of court orders contemplated. Are there any other questions?
I had a question.
Carol, you said you had three points, actually. You were not finished? I'm sorry?
No, there's two other points. In looking for a court order, there's two assumptions that are made, is that law enforcement agency, let's say from country A, may request the information from country B, but if the offense is not one that exists in the laws in country B, they won't be able to get that information from the law enforcement in country B. And that goes to just such a simple thing as maybe it's against the law here for a non-custodial parent to take a child out of the country, but in the other country that's not an offense. So the law enforcement effectively, let's say in country A where it is against the law and the judges are saying, go forth and do your investigation, won't be able to do that investigation. And that would apply to anything, even as simple as spam. Spam may be illegal in certain countries, but not in others. And the final one is that if there is no mutual legal assistance treaty between two particular countries, then that information won't be, let's say it's country A doesn't have an assistance treaty with country B, then country A can come and ask the law enforcement in country B for that information, and the law enforcement from the second country will not be able to provide it. So it's just, I think there's misconceptions on when court orders can be used, and I just wanted to clarify that.
Okay, thank you. There was somebody else in the queue?
Aubrey.
Aubrey, go ahead.
Okay, yeah, I had basically one question, I mean, one thing I'm trying to understand. When this particular proposal talks about following the due process, is it actually saying that one has to use a court order, or is it saying that one has to follow the due process of the location that they're in without judging it? But I don't know that it was being quite as specific, at least I didn't understand it, so that's why this is the question, as being quite as specific as, you know, follow the U.S. type of procedure of court order, but it was follow the due process chain that is in force in any particular place. The other thing I really wanted to question, whether this really is a more restricted notion, as you indicated in your presentation. In some sense, the fact that it is an avenue that's open to anyone within the due process limitations of the countries within which they are, and it, of course, puts the onus on them as citizens or entities within their country to get their country to have the right, by their view, access, due process access.
All right. So I think you're highlighting, Avery, that this proposal really does rely on national law, and that national laws can both be, you know, be very varied across countries. I think Carol and you would agree on that. And we don't really know then the full implications of the due process proposal for access, because it would vary from country to country.
Well, Milton, Carol, can I step in again?
Okay.
It comes down to the definition of what you call due process. Too often in legislation that we currently have, and I'm going to assume it's the same everywhere, we use the terminology assuming it means one thing, and in different areas it means completely different things. For example, the term in Canada for having the legal authority, some people will interpret that to mean you need a court order. In other cases, they will say, well, it's a police officer acting in the course of their duties. So sometimes it's a simple matter of definition. In asking whether Wendy Shelter actually means due process, that would assist in clarifying, I think, part of this.
Okay. We will solicit information from Wendy. Is there any other questions about this?
Yeah, this is Jay.
Who?
Jay.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, so we're talking with a lot of the law enforcement. They're telling me that a majority of the investigation that law enforcement does is actually done by private citizens before it actually gets to them, and that law enforcement is generally an escalation step where, you know, private companies like eBay and Microsoft will actually do a majority of the work and then basically pass it on to law enforcement. So I think the due process proposal maybe...
Okay, I think I understand your point. I think we're getting into debating the proposal now, and we haven't even explained half of the proposals yet, so why don't we move on to the business constituency proposal from David Ferris. This I've grouped in a class as saying that basically anybody can be a potentially legitimate third party. David and the data input proposal, and both of these apply for access proposals, mention a certification process. Definitely involve providing access to a broader range of parties. Is David on the line still?
I am.
You are. There you are. Okay. Would you like to, in a minute and a half, run through the essential features of this proposal?
Sure. So the third parties is broadly defined to include all legitimate third parties, as far as I could, including those set forth in the GACS guidelines and principles. It is an application process, but it's a one-stop shop certification process that's based on self-certification of legitimacy, and that companies would only need to submit one single application form. There'd be a centralized WHOIS database that is password protected, and then the legitimate third parties that only pay for costs incurred in submitting their application, with the rest of the costs being incurred by registrars and ICANN in some way. A short overview, Milton. I think I beat your minute and a half.
That was great, David. That allows us to ask questions, so I have one. You talk about a simple application form that identifies legitimate third parties. I don't think you're saying simply that somebody would say they're legitimate and that would make them legitimate. Would there be some review or, how would ICANN determine legitimacy?
Well, I think that there would be a set of criteria that would be established. You would have to self-certify that you comply with those criteria, and there could be some sort of ex post facto review if necessary.
Would anybody from the registrar community care to explain about how far we are from a centralized WHOIS database and how difficult it might be to achieve that? Is that a major step, or is that simply an integration across database problem?
Hi, Milton. This is Jay again. So I am from the registrar constituency, but I've worked on the WHOIS issue quite a bit, and I would say we're extremely far away from that. In fact, we're probably going further away from that in the future. I don't think registrars want to be in a centralized WHOIS database. They want to see, as part of the OPA proposal, that registries themselves, with their centralized WHOIS, stop showing it. So I don't think that's something that the registrars would be in agreement with.
Well, it doesn't so much matter whether they agree with it or not at this point of our discussion. I want to know just is it feasible, or are we talking, you know, hugely difficult technical integration processes, or are we simply talking about, you know, assuming we could bang the registrars into accepting it, are we talking about something that would be implemented?
We already have a centralized WHOIS database for thick registries. So it currently exists in the ICANN model right now, if you look at .org or .info.
Well, it does not, actually. It only includes each TLD, but it's not one centralized database, so all of the TLDs. And to answer your question, Milton, yes, it would be a real hard topic for us to do. It would be very expensive, and all of the 800 registrars we have right now, plus all the SIG registries, would have to work on that. So it's very complicated, as she said.
It's Paul speaking, and I agree with that. But, Milton, I think you also have to look at the purpose of it. If the purpose is cure cancer, maybe the costs make sense. But if the purpose, you know, if we could accomplish the purpose some other way, maybe that other way makes sense.
Okay.
Milton, this is Steve Metallitz. Could I get in the queue?
You are it. You're in. There's no queue.
Just picking up on what Paul said, I wonder if I could ask David, would the same result or a similar result occur if it was simply required that each registrar honor the password that was issued? In other words, each registrar could still retain its own data, but it would have to honor the password that was issued by ICANN.
I think that would be a second best option, but I think it's something that we could consider, Steve.
Okay.
This is Walter Nate from OPSA. Could I make one comment?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, the numbers of the hundreds of registrars already makes it a very good discussion to try and centralize it, I think, from our point of view. Because 800 agreements is a lot to achieve.
Okay.
With the BLA proposal, it doesn't have to be centralized. Because you would have a key.
But right, because to get a centralized key, that's what I mean. Get a centralized key and a centralized point where we can register or credit ourselves, whatever we like to call it. So that would be a very big trade, considering all the 800 agreements you would have to get otherwise. That's my point.
Yep. Any other questions about the apply for access proposal? Now, I kind of grouped this with the Alvarez proposal. Alvarez did not mention as broad a number of third parties as David did. However, I think the intent and nature of the proposal was basically the same, that there's some kind of a subscription or... another question for you, David, is when you talk about this password, do you mean you get this password once and it's good forever for unlimited usage, or is it a specific incident that you're dealing with?
No, a more general password that you can use on an ongoing basis, Milton.
Okay. It would never be revoked, or?
I think it could possibly be revoked if it's determined that the legitimate third party is using the Whois database in a manner inconsistent with, you know, the criteria established.
So would we'd have to talk about the criteria, wouldn't we then? Because, you know.
Right. I mean, but it wouldn't be for marketing purposes. You know, shouldn't be.
Yeah, but couldn't it be, you know, hey, I just want the whole database because I'm a law firm and I might need it someday.
No, but I mean, I think it's somewhat defined by the third parties, right? I mean, you say for IP purposes, so it would be a law firm using it for IP investigations, for example.
Yeah, my question is, can that law firm then download the whole database?
No, I don't. That's not what my proposal was intended to allow.
We should put those in there. That will really help it clarify it.
Okay, we can put that in there.
You know, is it they have to have, you know, reason to believe that this name is infringing, or can they just, you know, download the whole database?
Then?
Is it a one-shot deal or not?
Well, I think he said it was...
How many names can they, you know, query per day, for example?
Well, I wouldn't want to put a limit on the number they can, but I'm not talking about wholesale data mining.
Then why not put a limit on it?
Well, because, I don't know how many investigations a company might undertake in a given day. eBay said they did 3,000 in a certain period. I don't remember what that was, but... You know, it's going to depend on the type of company and the types of needs that they have. We, as a company, we don't just have needs. Our network security people use it. MySpace uses it. I mean, there are a whole host of needs that we encounter. And how do I know on a given day how many that's going to be?
Okay, so there's no limit. Again, we're just clarifying the proposal here. No limit. Your certification process remains a bit hazy, but... It's run by ICANN. They get an application form, and there's some possibility of revocation based on non-compliance with these unspecified criteria. Is that fair enough?
Yep.
Okay, so let's go on to the data input proposal. Is Pat Payne here?
Milton?
Yes.
This is Beth Collins. Just one question to David. Faris, concerning the potentiality of ex post review for potentially revoking this accreditation, does he consider anything like logging of requests or any trace of the requests that are being made?
I'm sorry, Beth Collins, could you repeat that?
Yeah. In order to facilitate any kind of ex post review of the proper use of the accreditation, do you consider any kind of logging of the request or a trace of what uses have been made by the specific actor?
I think we'd have to think of scalability of that. And I need to think about that more. I mean, we wouldn't be using it for anything other than the legitimate need of the company, from my company's perspective. But
you understand that as you adopt the self-declaration mechanism, which is a valid mechanism for this proposal, then there is a potential for abuse. So if there is a review afterwards, on what can you base the review?
Yeah, I have a comment on that. Tony Harris here.
Tony, go ahead.
Yeah, I think that's a very good suggestion, really, because, David, basically you could have some method. I don't think the registrars have to put this into operation, but you could have some sort of a screen where you click on the reason you're doing the search. You know, it could be law enforcement or IP infringement or whatever it is. And that could generate an audit trail, which would be basically what was just suggested. You could have that that access logged. And I know I heard somebody express concern that that could be a scalable problem, but with the speed and memory of current software applications, I hesitate to think that would be the case.
I got a question, too.
Okay, who is that, Paul?
That's Paul.
Okay, are there any other questions on this proposal?
Yes.
Yeah, I'd like to add something after Paul.
Okay, who are you?
I'm Jay.
Jay? Paul and Jay, I'd really like to move on. We're getting close to 10:30.
My quick question is, are they contemplating any other penalty for bad actors besides just revocation of the password?
Clearly that's not part of the proposal. Did you have anything in mind, David, for that?
I didn't, but I would be happy to hear what others think about it.
Okay, this is Walt from Opta. I think if somebody...
Hold on, we got Jay.
Okay, sorry.
So, I'd like to see in this proposal that that I can actually act as the proxy gateway to the registrar, because... by allowing the registrar to authenticate with the password, we're basically giving credentials to each registrar. And if there's 800 registrars out there, that's basically a credential problem that everybody's now receiving keys for everybody else. And there's no way of cutting a person off centrally unless that proxy goes back to ICANN.
Okay.
So I'd like to see that part of your proposal says that, you know, ICANN is running the proxy that authenticates and then goes grabs the data from the registrar.
Okay.
Good point.
One more comment. Was it Mr. DeNavis?
Yes, thank you. First, that on the whole database being given out on a request, I think that will be very much against the privacy rules, because then you're just data mining and hoping to find something probably. And the second one is that if there's abuse of the accreditation and the WHOIS service, then somebody's doing something wrong against one law or another, so it would be able to complain to the privacy agency or to anti-spam agency like Opta or whoever, and they can investigate into the complaint. But then somebody is probably data mining, and which is definitely against the law here.
Okay. I think that's an important point that, David, you might want to think about in terms of the binary access. You're giving total access versus no access. You might want to think about modifying that in a future iteration. Pat Kane is not on the line.
Oh, yes, he is.
He is? Oh, good.
He was being polite because other people were talking.
All right. Maybe too polite. Go ahead. Tell us about your proposal.
We actually tried to do kind of like the certification effort in the anti-fraud community to keep track of our databases of good stuff we have, and we've given up on the certification piece. And so when I was looking at this, I keep hearing people say, oh, it's certification, we're going to have somebody certify it, although there's really nobody in the world who can certify everybody. We started thinking about going it the other way, which says the goal is to do privacy protections. Privacy protections are always based on national law more than anything else. So you use the registrant data, mostly the billing data, to decide how to do their privacy protections. Let anybody and their brother look at standard WHOIS data if they so want it. And we separated the accesses into two pieces. The normal law enforcement is currently doing an investigation. They're going after somebody. It uses the standard stuff as it is now. I mean, there's MLATs, and there's, you get a court order in places or a government writ, and you talk amongst yourselves around the world. It's kind of slow. It doesn't work really good, but there's treaties in place for it, and you can eventually get your data.
if you just really want to get the private data from the people, not the entire record, but the whole thing, you would go to the OPAC or the person and say, can I please have their data? And based on mostly the where the billing address of the person is, you decided from the national law. The goal here is not so much to deal with the happy people, but try to figure out how to deal with the bad actors, because the people who you really want to get in touch with who say, no, we're not going to give out any of that information, then they'll know where I am and come take me out, and put that responsibility to decide what the right thing to do is on the proxy service. Much like agency law kind of works in the U.S.
So you're proposing basically a proxy service. Is that right?
Well, currently there is proxy service, no matter what you call it. There are numbers of particularly big companies that don't put their home address in their registration. It's a law office someplace, or it's a post office box in odd island.
But what I'm trying to get at is what you're proposing is essentially more of a working group A topic than access proposal. I guess the question would be, what are the conditions under which you get access to the what's behind the proxy?
I don't know if I have a concise list of that.
What I understood you to say is almost sounded like the due process proposal in the sense that it depends on national law and it depends on the legal jurisdiction. Is that right?
Yes.
Milton, this is Steve Metalich. Could I get in the queue?
Go ahead. Yes.
Yeah, I think I agree with you, Milton, that this is kind of a subgroup A question, because if you take Pat's description and just substitute OPAC for proxy, you may get something close to what some of the things that are being talked about in subgroup A, which really deals with what is the OPAC supposed to do. The OPAC is a gateway to the data, and what is the OPAC supposed to do? I mean, it doesn't eliminate the question of certification. It just kind of brings it to another level, I think. Whether there's certification or not, there has to be some, or there may need to be some guideline for what the gatekeeper is supposed to do when someone comes in and says, I want this information.
Okay. Any other questions about this proposal?
Milton, Mike from ESA.
Go ahead.
Would there be some sort of mechanism in this proposal to prevent someone from giving a billing address to a jurisdiction that had the most restrictive privacy laws simply as a means of gaming the system, when in fact they're not from that jurisdiction?
This is Pat. I doubt it, because it's really easy to do. We see it all the time now.
This is Avery. Can I comment on that? I think that one then falls into the jurisdictional aspects of each locality, and you know that needs to be fixed locally in that case. For those that object to it, I don't think any proposal can be totally gaming proof and can assume a heterogeneity, a homogeneity of all the rules and restrictions and possible loopholes for gaming elsewhere.
Okay. Any other questions about data input? All right. Is Palmer still around?
I'm here.
Take it away, Palmer.
All right. Basically, Professor, I took your standards. I thought, for example, David's proposal certainly would take care of our concerns, and I simply, following Let a Thousand Flowers Bloom, decided that I would do a proposal that was bank-specific, because, after all, much of the fraud on the consumer is through the Internet websites that use bank names. And so I was looking at the standards you set out of clear and implementable definition of legitimate third parties, because obviously how we get our arms around that, it seems to me there are two key questions that we confront. one, a definitional one of determining who the legitimate third parties are, and secondly, the process of certifying and authenticating for safety protection that the parties actually are what's defined as legitimate third parties. Banks seem to me very easily defined because limited to governmentally chartered banks, that's a universe that you're either in or you're not in. And furthermore, the certification and authenticating process could be done through the bank regulators so that the burden would not be on the registrars or anyone else. And you would have the comfort of knowing that the certification was done by a neutral governmental entity. That's the basic overview. I'd be happy to answer any specific questions if I could.
Okay, any questions about this one?
Again, this is Margie. Palmer, what about service providers that service the banking industry? As an example, companies that provide anti-phishing services. A lot of banks go to companies like Mark Mahler and other ones to deal with anti-phishing related activities. Would they be part of the proposal?
That's a good question, Margie, and we have not discussed it among ourselves. Let me talk to my folks and see what they think, how that might work.
There are a lot of volunteer organizations, it's Paul speaking again, there are a lot of volunteer organizations like Spam House that also, fight these kind of things, spam and phishing and so on. So related to that, not just companies, but would individuals, fall under the same thing?
That question was directed to Palmer?
Yeah, just like Margie said, she's saying, hey, what about other companies that help with anti-phishing? What about other individuals is my question.
I guess the same question would apply is what sort of access, information would banks be permitted to share with those who would be working with them to prevent the fraud? I think that it's the same question whether it goes to the, Mark Monitor or an individual who might be working with a bank. And I need to talk to my people and kind of think through how that might work.
I was thinking more about the way the information flows. Do you contemplate the information flowing to the bank first and then the individuals or companies that help banks with fraud? Or would it be flowing?
Under the proposal as written right now, it just flows to the bank. And the bank has to maintain the confidentiality of that information.
I understand it. Thanks, Matt. Thank you.
Milton, Philip, just with a comment on this and perhaps generally about what you've gone through so far. I think Palmer's proposal, which is sector-specific and therefore benefits from what looks like to be a workable certification process, is, of course, similar to the LEA proposals we had earlier, which had Interpol as part of the certification process. And I think those two ideas highlight then the difficulty of the broader group of third parties and the difficulty of a workable certification process for them. So I think possibly that is our ongoing work item in terms of the nature of certification and subsequent access, and should it be different for those for whom you can have a third party versus those for whom are too much of a heterogeneous group in order to allow certification to work.
Exactly. I think that's the big issue that we're dealing with here. And that's one of the reasons why I was kind of hoping in describing the Blob proposal, where it says private third parties could request information from an LEA, the hope was that there would be a trickle-down effect that the private parties who obviously participate in law enforcement either by initiating complaints or by actually doing their own investigations would be able to benefit indirectly from law enforcement access. However, we are out of time. I don't know whether this whole teleconference turns into a pumpkin at 10:30 or not, but I think we need to skip item 3 of our agenda, and we need to talk about next steps for the next week's meeting. My idea for that was...
Milton, yeah, this is Beth Holm. May I make just a brief comment on the last point before we move to the next item?
Okay.
I was thinking about the remark that was made about the fact that we are confronted with, on the one hand, special types of actors that have an easy and workable certification process, and the difficulty to handle a lot of other actors who do not have such a certification process available, but are working in part with the actors that have already been mentioned. Would there be anything that would be worth exploring in the notion of a distributed certification process whereby chains of accreditation would allow a certain number of master accredited entities to enable actors that they trust enough and that they're working with the responsibility of revoking them in due course if they don't comply with a certain number of rules, a bit like the registrar type of thing? It's just an idea that came to mind and I didn't want to let it slip and insert it.
Well, it's an idea to maybe you could develop in terms of our next steps. Certainly worth looking into.
This is Ralph from OPA. Can I have one question to Mr. Hamilton?
Okay.
Okay, thanks. Are you familiar with the Dutch protocol between banks and the government, the computer emergency response team?
No, I'm not.
Okay, then that's something which we can discuss offline better than, unless everybody is interested, but I think it's better to do offline, considering time.
I'll say do it online, but do it on text. That is, submit the, use the list.
That's possible, but I can also make a phone call and do something on text, because it's probably easier to explain when on the phone. But I will also make it on text, but it's not something which I think is appropriate for this subject.
Okay.
That's why it was this suggestion to do it offline.
Yep. Yes,
that's fine.
Okay. I think your email address is on the list, and I'll send you an email with my phone number.
All right. Very good.
Okay.
Good. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. So what I would like to see is... I guess I would propose that the next step is that people within these categories consolidate their ideas and respond to the fairly extensive questions and need for clarifications that were proposed today in the discussion. And if anybody, based on this discussion, thinks they have some brilliant new proposal, then they could submit it. And then I think in our next week's call, we will basically start talking about merits and problems of the various proposals, which we've tried to avoid today, but obviously spilled over into that sometimes. But so I'm thinking of a two-stage process. Over the next week, we consolidate and integrate proposals where possible, and then resubmit them, and then we have a discussion about merits of the various approaches that we have in front of us next week. How does that sound?
No, I think it sounds very good. I think from the discussion we've had already, there's clearly very good scope for consolidation. I think a lot of people have been aiming at the same sort of end point, certainly in terms of the access process mechanism sections, and I think there's some very good scope to consolidate.
Excellent.
Milton, do I understand your description correctly that it's still possible to submit a new proposal?
Yeah, I think it would obviously need to benefit from and take into account what's been said so far and have some clear advantages over what's on the table already, but definitely.
Okay.
All right.
Milton, this is Dan.
Dan, how do you do?
I just wanted to find out if there are any follow-up questions, we should be able to address those on the list through email between now and next week's call.
Yes, indeed. Although we're dealing with lawyers, and they don't like email as much as we do, Dan.
Understood.
All right. If I may be allowed one lawyer joke for the week, I will call the meeting to a close.
Thanks, Milton.
Thanks, Milton.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.